a creative and really wanting to challenge myself as a creative, I decided to do a dual POV, something that I've never done before in this novel, and to try and create this dual perspective story about what happens when teens overuse screens.
That's Aida Salazar, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Aida Salazar is an award-winning author and poet whose novels written in verse include The Moon Within and Ultraviolet. Her work explores identity, culture, family, and growing up with honesty and compassion. She joins us to talk about her latest middle grade novel, Stream, which is also written in verse. Aida, welcome to Conversations.
Thank you so much, Dan. It's so good to see you again.
Well, this is a book where you bring together characters from two different books into this story. So tell us about the inspiration for the story and why you wanted to put these two characters together.
Yeah, so I wrote, my first debut book was called The Moon Within. And then I wrote a loose companion, Ultraviolet. And Ultraviolet and The Moon Within are both books that are kind of about puberty. They're both coming of age stories. They're about puberty. They're about all the new feelings that happen when you're leaving childhood and entering adolescence that we don't really see too much in middle grade literature. And so when my editor, Tracy Mack at Scholastic, asked me to spend a little more time on some of the themes that I sort of started to brush up on in Ultraviolet, which are technology use and what it does to our modern day teens, and also to spend time with this character, Elio, who is just hilarious and fun. And so I decided, I thought about it a little bit, and I decided to bring both of these characters together to speak. And because I'm also a creative and really wanting to challenge myself as a creative, I decided to do a dual POV, something that I've never done before in this novel, and to try and create this dual perspective story about what happens when teens overuse screens.
And as a result, the two of them end up in rural Mexico where they have no internet. Tell us about the story here.
Yeah, so they both live in Oakland. They don't know each other. And all of a sudden, they're at a party, the graduation party, and one of their friends has gone missing and they think he's dead because his socials have been wiped clean. And the community goes into an uproar. The superintendent sends a letter home saying, you know, parents, do what you can to keep your kids off screens and get them out into nature. And so both of the parents separately and individually have this brilliant idea to go snooping into their kids' phones and their device usage. And they discover that they've both been exhibiting some dangerous behavior. Elio has crashed his grades because he's been gaming. Celi has started to exhibit some dangerous behavior online with strangers, and she's has these aspirations to be an influencer, and so there's all of these kind of things that are happening to them, and the parents say, you know what, we're going to send you to Mexico. We're going to take away your screens, and we're going to send you to Mexico where there's no running water, no electricity, and of course, no internet. And Elio is to work on a stream restoration project with his best friend, Paco, and his uncle and his family. And Celi is going to work as an understudy with her two tías, her aunts, who are herbalists, natural medicine practitioners. And so that's how they end up there.
And both of them see this as, you know, major punishment, you know, to be cut off from the internet, away from their usual friends and acquaintances. But eventually they find each other and they figure out that they have a lot of things in common in many ways.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the place is really desolate and it's called Atoyac, which means stream in the native language. And all of a sudden, without the devices, they're stripped clean. And it kind of allowed them to begin to kind of look outside of themselves to see the world that they are inhabiting, the sounds and the smells and the stream, and then one another. All of a sudden, there are these other people that begin to have, you know, these effects on them. And so, yeah, Yeah. So I wanted them to kind of begin to see the world around them and to reconnect.
I'm wondering about this rural setting that you put them in and kind of what that might represent emotionally for these two.
Well, I think one of the things that I was hoping for is that, and I see this with my own kids, I've seen it with my own kids, and that once they're inside nature and once they're inside this space where they can think and reflect and remember, imagine in nature, which happens in nature, they grow. So I wanted them to grow emotionally. And what it represents for Elio, the stream, is this, you know, he doesn't really work hard on the stream during the book. He's kind of like dialing it in and he knows it, you know, but because he's not like he's really fighting belonging to this place. And she is same, you know, she is really attached to her old life and she's got lots of FOMO because her best friend went to Hawaii without her. And so she's having like these, they're both kind of resistant to it. But as they kind of lean into this experience, they gain deeper meaning. So I wanted them both to kind of grow internally before they grew, you know, on the outside. Because our kids nowadays, with the advent of the internet and this massive computers at their fingertips, they have access to all of this information, good and bad, right? And an overload of it. And when we strip it away, all we are left with is our spirits, in our relation with one another and how to be cohesive. So those are all kind of the things that I was thinking about when I was thinking about the arc of their characters.
And for them, it's also a cultural reconnection as well.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So Elio, there's a one of the women that he meets is his best friend Paco's aunt by marriage, and she's an archaeologist. And so she is kind of studying the archaeological artifacts and sites that are around. And so she's teaching them about history. And Celi is learning this legacy of traditional natural medicine that she is a part of. And that she sees her mother do, because her mother's an herbalist, and her great aunts do, and she's kind of amazed. And so reconnecting to that part of themselves, there's a moment where Celi is looking out onto this kind of beautiful landscape, and she remembers something that's told to her by one of her aunts, and is that she belongs to the land. And so belonging to the land, belonging to culture, having experiences that they both hadn't ever had with their cultures is something that I also, I think, gives them meaning and helps them grow.
And Elio becomes attracted to her. And this causes some problems for him because he had a really rough time with his first love in Ultraviolet. So he's still kind of dealing with that baggage as well.
Yes, he is. So they're at a party, at a wedding. They've both never been to this traditional Mexican wedding on a rancho, which is like a community with only like 25, 30 homes. And Celi dances with this guy, and he walks into this party and he sees this beautiful girl dancing with this guy all night. And he just falls so desperately in love. But then he realizes that he has to kind of relearn some of the habits or learn from some of the habits that he developed in Ultraviolet, like how to be a friend first, right? How do I not be desperate? How do I show her that I care about her without having, you know, all of this kind of toxic masculinity, these issues of toxic masculinity that arose in the last book come back. And so, you know, we're flawed humans, right? And I really wanted Elio to show these trials, right? Like, we don't get it right just because you learned a lesson one time. You know, sometimes it takes a couple lessons before you get it right.
And Paco keeps reminding him of that. He said, don't go down this toxic route again.
He's like, did you not learn anything? It's pretty cool. I love to write those two because they have great banter and they make me laugh. There was a scene that I took out because, you know, when you go to rural Mexico, there's no running water, and that means no running toilets, right? And so this new experience of having to go in an outhouse and all of this, that got taken out. My editor was like, I don't know if we want to put that in there, but I have so much fun. I always smile when I write them.
You wrote this book in verse as well. And the thing about the verse is that after I was reading it for a while, I just kind of forgot that it was in verse. I was just reading the story. And I'm wondering about sort of the challenge of putting something in verse, especially when it comes to middle grade readers.
Yeah, you know, because of the internet, because of shortened attention spans, we are having to, you know, verse novels are becoming very popular. And so I don't see it so much as a challenge, but more of an opportunity to really capture kids, because I've got one shot with them. I've got minimal words. And so it's really about economy. And for me, lyricism is really important to make sure that they see beautiful images and wonderful metaphors, and that language does lots of work with very little room on the page. So that, I guess perhaps that's the challenge always in writing a novel in verse, that we have so few real estate. We have a little bit of real estate to work with. And so it wasn't so much of a challenge, but really kind of trying to hook them and to kind of mesmerizing. That's what the writer does, right? We try and enchant our readers and to continue to read. And that's because we don't provide flat characters. We don't provide, you know, no images or anything that will, you know, spark imagination. So yeah, I see it as a part of my craft, but also as an opportunity to just get a reluctant reader to love a story.
And the other thing I think is an attraction to it, and maybe to kids as well, because of attention span issues, as you pointed out, is that it comes off almost like a stream of consciousness, like you're in this person's mind. And you're just kind of going along with them, and they're talking to you in a way. And I just found that actually strengthens the story to not be bogged down with unnecessary details, you know, for the story. So I'm curious about your thoughts about that.
I have a theater friend who actually said, your books are kind of like monologues. And they are. They're these monologues that don't have to describe too many things. There are setting poems, right? And there are kind of context and flashback a little bit. But most of it is in the present and they're living it in real time. And yeah, and so in some ways, the person in a monologue doesn't have to describe all of the things around them, except if they're experiencing them. And it just puts you right into their heart and soul. And I love that space, that close first person space.
I also wanted to note that in terms of how the book is physically laid out, when we're hearing from Elio's point of view, it begins on the left side of the page. And when it's Sally's point of view, it begins on the right side of the page.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the beauty of writing in verse, that you can do these really kind of inventive, different things with language and what it looks like on the page. And I thought, one of the criticisms I have, and maybe people will have a criticism of this, but like of dual point of view stories, is that the writer sometimes bleeds what each character sounds like. And you know, we're human, so that happens. But I tried really hard to make their voices sound different, using different language and different textures to kind of differentiate them. But then I was like, well, but then I have this opportunity to do this fun thing and just physically put them on the different side of the page. So when the reader can open any part of the book, they'll know on the right is Sally and on the left is Elio. And so, yeah, it was just a fun thing, but also to kind of strengthen that differentiation in some ways.
Well, congratulations on having this book stream out there. What's next for you?
Well, I've got a couple of picture books that are kind of on the horizon, and I'm working on yet another book that I can't say too much about just yet, but it's a book that is in the same universe of these kids who are in Oakland and not related. I mean, they're related, but I mean, the stories are standalone rather. And they're in Oakland and they're confronting a different kind of monster, which is AI. So here we are continuing this conversation.
This middle grade novel is Stream, written in verse by Aida Salazar. Aida, thank you for talking with me today.
My pleasure, Dan. Thank you so much.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen to the latest episodes on your phone or tablet, and you'll also find us on Facebook. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.